Becky Brown with your Club New Life Collective for the month of March. You know, March aligns with the Christian season of Lent. Some of you may practice that. It begins March 5th, which is Ash Wednesday, and it's where we're called to repent and spiritually prepare for the celebration of Easter and Christ's resurrection. I didn't practice that growing up, but I have a good friend that does, and in probably the last 15 years, I've made that a regular practice just to reflect on what Christ has done for us. We're called to repent and spiritually prepare for the celebration of Easter and Christ's resurrection, and it's a time of confession and forgiveness. Boy, isn't that just an amazing experience to recognize that we are forgiven. You know, that's what Lent is all about. Granted, we never have to wait for March to come to address forgiveness in our own lives. And actually, the need to either forgive or to be forgiven rears its head more often than I would like. We actually just talked about that with a caller on today's show. It's just a reminder that God is able to forgive even the worst of us, and He does so in love. Well, we want to start with Chris Williams' recent talk on where your pain and God's grace intersect. Following Chris's talk will be a call from Jennifer about addressing challenges as her daughter begins to date. Then we'll have a teaching moment with Dr. Sherry Keffer on gut instinct and intuition. Let's listen.
We are all carrying struggles and historical pains inside of us, one way or the other. Not all equal. Not all the same. And I say this, the details are always different. That's where we always think, well, I'm not like so-and-so, and I'm not like such-and-such. And I'm like, I get it. But the process is always the same. And the process is that when painful and harmful and hurtful things happen in our lives, it gets into our soul, i.e. body. And it becomes an embodied experience. And I mentioned the other day about landmines that create landmines inside of us with tripwires, you know? So if Mary is feeling critiqued in some particular area of her life and it happens to walk through that tripwire, it's like, Mary, you just can't get it right. Then it's going to immediately just create pain. Now, it's easy for us to say, well, just extract the landmine. Like, I agree. That's my work. That's what I try to do with people, is extract the landmines, you know? Oftentimes, quite honestly, what we do is we try to change the people who are walking through the tripwires, knowing that the tripwire is never going to change. Instead of like, no, I got to do something inside, internal inside of me. But what Mary showed us in her wisdom and courage is that one of the remedies of this? Put yourself in the way, in the pathway of God's goodness. Because those landmines inside of us are like also little monsters who want to be fed. They're always looking for evidence. You know, mine sits up here in my chest region and says, you're not good enough. And then it takes over and starts making up all of this evidence of why I'm not good enough. You know, so I walk into a room and I see Lauren over there and I'm like, uh-oh, there's Lauren. You know, he's been really successful in his life. He's really wise. He's, you know, he's a great husband. And I'm making up a story about Lauren. That's probably true. But then saying, I can't get close to Lauren because it's going to expose my not good enough. You know? Or I'm going to be like, oh, his goodness is so painful for me that I'm going to look for chinks in the armor. Right? Instead of being like, you know what? Maybe I just need to put myself with counter evidence and place myself in the pathway of God's grace and God's goodness. I think it's a practice that we definitely need because we are pained people on planet Earth. If we think about childbirth, pain is our entrance fee here, right? It is our entrance fee. And so to pretend like we live a pain-free life doesn't work. Now, and I think this is a trick of the evil one, it's then to convince us that we are unique and alone in our pain when it's a human universal. And part of that is that pain and all of its destructive attributes thrive in isolation. Exactly what Holly was showing us this morning is what is harmed. And I say this, harmed in relationship needs to be healed in relationship, but it's also harmed in secrecy needs to be healed in the light. And it's terrifying, but it's also universal and really important. New Life's mission is to bring hope and healing in life's hardest places. We need that now more than ever before. This mission is crucial. Crucial to the church, crucial to us, crucial to people. God's loved humanity. And that's what we get to participate in over and over and over and over again as family of New Life, friends of New Life, is to bring just that hope and healing in life's hardest places. Another way I'd like to say that today is to bring light and love in life's darkest places. You see, we don't need redemption in the good things. But oftentimes, that's exactly what we're leading with. What we need is Christ's redemption in the darkened, hardest places. And our need actually is to create more vulnerability in those areas. You see, we're all vulnerable to something. I do this sort of counter-argument. And it's not really a counter-argument, but oftentimes our teachings, and I think Brené Brown has done a brilliant job in helping us understand vulnerability, but it's oftentimes vulnerability as a verb. And I'm like, it's not, it's a noun. Vulnerability is not something you do. Vulnerability is something you already are. You don't get the option. So what vulnerability is, in the end, is just honesty and humility. But it's also a choice in this way. As we're all vulnerable to something, including the pains and hurts that we carry, we're definitely, put me in the front of the line, vulnerable to all of the social media distractions and the news cycles and all those other things. What we really need is a vulnerability to God's goodness over and over and over again. Anne Voskamp in her bestseller, 1,000 Gifts, is actually quoting Julian of Norwich, in which she says this, "The highest form of prayer is to the goodness of God. God only desires that our soul cling to him with all of its strength, in particular, that it clings to his goodness. For all the things our minds can think about God, it is thinking upon his goodness that pleases him the most and brings the most profit to our souls." And what I want to close with is that there is a practice and intentionality of putting ourselves in vulnerability to God's goodness, getting ourselves right in the crosshairs and the pathway of God's grace and goodness. And quite honestly, not hard to do here. Not hard to do on this phenomenal adventure that we're on together. And we need it so desperately. And we need it, that reminder. But now the challenge is, as even this morning as I woke up with anxiety around all the things I need to do when I get back into my daily life, and in the midst of those anxieties, in the midst of those tensions, my reminder is, man, when you go back, you need to practice putting yourself in the way of God's goodness. I'll land it here. When my boys turned 12, I decided, you know, with the help of Ember, my wife, to take them on sort of a rite of passage trip. And so my older boy turned 12 this last year, and originally I was like, oh, anywhere in the world, but the budget didn't allow for that. So I'm like, okay, anywhere in the United States. And still the budget was like, whoa, okay. So he chose Alaska. And so we took 10 days and went up to Alaska. In fact, it was Friends of New Life that hosted us up there in Anchorage and had us use our property down there on the Kenai Peninsula, and it was just spectacular. But one of the things that struck me of thinking about God's creation and God's goodness in his creation, as Genesis tells us over and over and over again, is how unbelievably wasteful it is. There are areas of this planet Earth that most and the majority of people will never see that are breathtakingly spectacular. God's goodness is not in short supply. It is wasteful. He has so much of it. And that's what I want to encourage us with. Is that, hey, I don't know where to find it. I don't know where it is. Put yourself in the way of it. Go find it. Go practice it. Because like what Julian of Norwich had prayed and Voskamp reminded us of, and what I need the reminder of, is that it is thinking upon his goodness that pleases him the most, but brings the most profit to my soul, to that place between my chin and my belly button. So as we go along, again, for you, it's going to be unique for you. What, quote unquote, does it for you? We'll find out what that is and keep doing it over and over. And when it stops working, find the new thing. Find the new thing. Because really it is the God's goodness that's going to sustain us in the midst of continuing to bring hope and healing in life's hardest places. Thank you.
Let's go to Jennifer now. She's in Washington, D.C., listening on WAVA. Hi there, Jennifer.
Hi.
Hi there. Thanks for calling in today. How can we help you?
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question. I have an 18-year-old daughter that I'll just give a quick background. She's never dated. She's been working with a fella for over a year now, and more recently they started hanging out in a group atmosphere. And a couple of days ago he asked her to go out on a date, and she accepted. But when she came home to, her father is away on travel, so she called him last night and told him that she had a date. And my husband's first question is, does he go to church? And my daughter said, no, Dad, but he's not opposed to it, but he didn't grow up like her going to church every Sunday. So my husband has already basically shot it down, and now she is really, I think, upset that he's not even trying to get to know, like, what's this guy about. It's just focused on, does he go to church? Mm-hmm. So I don't know what to do. We don't know how to direct her, I guess.
Well, it makes me sad for her and for your husband, and for the guy who's being judged unfairly. He's not opposed to going to church. He just didn't have the opportunity to grow up in church. And it's, you know, we're called to be the light, right? And so this is an opportunity for your family to minister to him just by being who you are. But if she goes back and says, well, my dad said I can't go on a date with you because you've never gone, you don't go to church. You didn't grow up in church. What is that doing to your ministry as a family?
Yes, I agree. And that's my stance. But I feel like my husband's, he's not here to defend it, but I won't be able to talk to him about it until this evening. But I just feel like he's very quick to basically be prejudgmental, like, well, he didn't go to church, so you don't need to mess with him. Well, like I told my daughter, she could very well be the vessel that leads him to God. Just because he didn't grow up that way doesn't mean he's not open to it.
Exactly.
And I know believers aren't supposed to mix with unbelievers, but am I wrong in thinking that just because he doesn't go to church doesn't mean he's not a believer?
Right. Just because he doesn't go to church doesn't mean he doesn't believe in Jesus. He didn't grow up in church.
Right.
Doesn't mean he couldn't believe in Jesus.
Right.
And, you know, I met my husband, we were 20, and I'd gone to church in summers when I was with my grandmother, but he was a preacher's kid. And last year when my in-laws retired, after 40 years of pastoring, I got to speak because I get to preach every once in a while. And it was an opportunity for me to share with them some of my thoughts. And I realized how scary it must have been for them that I was the woman he chose. I grew up in South Central LA. I grew up surrounded by gang violence. I didn't grow up in a family that went to church every Sunday. We did a lot of things that they did not approve of. And 36 years later, we're still married and have a fabulous family. And so I'm grateful to them for their work in ministry because it ministered to us. Our family is what it is now because of who they are. And so I think he's just limiting the work of the Holy Spirit. It makes me sad because I think he made the wrong call. And it also then puts something between him and his daughter that may change how she trusts him. And so I just think that he should take another look at it, and his fear is of man and not of God, and that he should take another stab at it and ask for a do-over, because she may not enjoy hanging out with this guy after they go on a date. But you slamming the door on it because he didn't grow up in church, it doesn't feel like wisdom to me.
What about the Bible verse that says not to be unequally yoked with unbelievers?
Right, but we're kind of putting the cart in front of the horse. She's not going to marry this guy.
This is her first date.
No, and this is the thing. You know, teenagers say, give me freedom and I'll show you I'm responsible. And parents are, well, show me you're responsible, we'll give you freedom. But I can see why there's been rigidity and why she's not gone out on a date. She's just been afraid. But your daughter did a really brave thing. She disclosed to you and she made a call to her dad, even though she already knew his answer. She knew his answer because she's been around her dad for a couple of decades now. And if her dad is controlling and more rigid and, you know, has some high spiritual standards, let me tell you what happens to kids in those homes eventually. They just go underground. They just stop being honest and stop telling you because it's too hard. They don't have their own path to sort through and to make decisions. Yes. And she needs that freedom to show you that she can be responsible with all that you guys have taught her. She's an adult. She's 18. And that rigidity is not healthy for her. She's got to make this her life, her faith. She's got to make choices regarding a future person. I mean, I got a different story than Jackie. I married a man, Connor, who my first husband grew up, he was a long lineage of pastors. Mm. His dad was a pastor. His dad's dad. And he's betrayed me, was a sex addict. So just because they go to church doesn't mean that they're necessarily good quality guys either.
Right.
So giving your daughter the space to sort through who he is and having you guys have to stretch a bit to trust her as she's trying to do this while she's still under her roof is the best thing you can do for her.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, that's where it kind of muddied the water for me, is because she is considered an adult. How much say-so, I guess, because she even said to me, she says, Mom, I didn't have to ask. She said, I could have just gone out and done it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yep. And she's letting you know that, like, she's been trained well, and she knows what she wants. I have two daughters, and their dad set the bar high. If she has a loving relationship with her dad and he's been a good father, he has set the bar. And so, again, there's fear of man, not of God. Do you trust God with your child, or don't you? Because you've had 18 years to raise her and teach her how to go out in the world and be safe and make healthy choices. Do you trust that? Do you trust that work or not? Or do you just trust the ideal of someone who grew up in church, which doesn't make them a better person? Please believe that. I think we get so disappointed sometimes because there are so many people. I had a call once, I think, where the woman was saying that people were saying she was too naive because she just believed that people who go to church are good people. And she just kept getting hurt because people who go to church are broken people.
Yeah. Thanks for calling in today. Hold on the line. We'll send you a copy of Doing Life with Your Adult Children.
I actually wanted to talk about gut instincts.
I like this.
And intuition today. There's been a few things going on in my life recently where I've had to rely on my gut, on my instincts, even in the midst of chaotic situations. I've had to ask myself, what am I feeling right now? And what would be the best for me right now? And that can be more difficult when we're in a situation where somebody is gaslighting us, somebody is lying, somebody is trying to manipulate to get something. It causes us to question our gut instincts, even though they're God-given. We were born with them. But it dampens them. It turns them down. It makes you question your own reality. And there's something called DARVO. It's D-A-R-V-O are the initials. But it happens in relationships when there's something being hidden. The D stands for deny the behavior. Like, so let's say something's going on and you notice something, see something, and you go and confront that person. You bring it to them, right? Doesn't even have to be a hard confrontation. You just say, hey, I found this and on your computer and I was, are you looking at porn? Are you doing something? Yeah. Or I noticed in the finances that there was money missing. What happens is after you bring that inquiry, they deny the behavior. D, they A, attack the one who's confronting them. So now they get angry with you. They get defensive. And then R stands for reverse, V, victim, O, offender. So reverse the victim in the offender role. So you end up in a position where you're the one that's in trouble or the biggest offender, and they're in the victim seat. And it's so disorientating. It can make you, again, begin to question what you just brought to them. And that's why it's considered psychological abuse, is because it erodes your sense of self and what you know to be true. So what are the things we can do if somebody is gaslighting you or DARVOing you? I want you to seek wise counsel. That's why we're on the show, right? That's why we have such great counselors across the country, because we need to seek wise counsel. I want you to begin to write down in a note section on your phone, like, what are the things that you saw, noticed? Start to chronicle in a private place that no one has access to, not your kids, not the person that's harming you. Share with close, safe friends only. This is not information to bring to the one that's hurting you. It's information you want to get validation for. So those are three things of many, but I talk about it in my book, Intimate Deception, Healing the Wounds of Sexual Betrayal. Gaslighting, deception, oh my, is a chapter that's in there, and I go into it in greater detail. But
well, and I think that trusting, learning to trust our gut instinct, not that it's the final authority, but it's giving us really, really important information. And if that's been taken away from us, or if we've given away, how to restore it. And I love those three steps.
Our next call focuses on a woman who battles with lust when she looks at a man, and then a woman who is looking for healing from a great deal of emotional challenges after a recent abortion. Following that is a teaching from Mark Cameron and Dr. Alice Benton on how did Jesus handle stress.
Jasmine in Columbus, Georgia, who is joining us on YouTube. We love our YouTube listeners and viewers. Jasmine, talk to us. What's going on today?
Just battling with lust, like sexual lust, like with the thoughts, like it's in my head, and try not to be too inappropriate here, but let's just say this. If I'm around an attractive man, then I start getting those thoughts.
Yes.
And then it's like I want to jump out of my skin and I want to run to hide, especially if he's a godly man, because I feel like the Holy Ghost in him can tell him, oh, well, she's having those dirty thoughts about you again. Yeah, because I lived worldly most of my life. So it's like the dudes I was around when I lived that life, they were players.
Yeah.
So I learned how to be flirtatious and I guess be a player from him. So when I'm around other guys, like, I guess men who are godly, it's like, I try not to take it there. Like, I just try to stay away from men because that seems to be my weakness, men.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
Like the temptations, yeah.
Jasmine, can I just say that as you're talking, my heart is breaking for you. Because underneath it, I just feel this great sense of pain for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What was your childhood experience like, especially in your home?
Well, the first time a sexual violation happened was one time my mom and dad got in a fight very long time ago. I was a kid. I think I was like 5 or 6 years old. And I don't know why this happened, but at some point he went from arguing with her to like forcing me in the bathroom. So you kind of already know what happened with that.
Oh, man.
And I didn't want to be in the bathroom with him. I tried to escape that situation. And, you know.
And Jasmine, how old were you when that happened?
I was a little girl.
5 or 6.
Yeah.
Like 5 or 6, I think.
Yeah.
I was a little girl.
Mm. Wow. Wow.
So you really learned how then, Jasmine, for survival, to view the world through a sexual lens.
Yes.
It's like the people I was around, a lot of them were they were fornicators and adulterers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I was around that stuff. It was like, it was, let's just say it was a big part of my life. It was always around.
Right. You were exposed and awakened at an early age, way too early.
Yeah. That's a great word, Jill, awakened.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime our sexuality is awakened before we are emotionally mature to handle it. So if we experience abuse at a young age, sexual abuse at a young age, like you did, Jasmine, if we're exposed to pornography or sexual material at a young age, like happened to me. What happens is because our emotional development has not matured enough, all of our emotions kind of get fused with our sexual development. And so everything becomes sexual.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if we're happy, we're horny. If we're sad, we're horny. If we're angry, we're horny. If we're lonely, we're horny. Like everything kind of just gets fused together because we didn't learn how to develop our sexuality in a mature way because we weren't mature yet. We could not have experienced sexuality in a mature way at 5, 6, 7 years old. There's just no way because you're not emotionally ready to handle that. And so it does end up creating this situation where we have almost this like hypersexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's
mm-hmm.
not a permanent state where I can't ever unlearn that behavior and can't learn how to handle my sexuality in a mature fashion. But we do need to recognize that if I'm not paying attention, that's my default mode. That's what's going to happen on its own unless I'm paying attention and I'm taking those thoughts captive and doing the discipline work of learning how to relate to my world in a different way.
Yeah.
Like Jasmine, how are your emotional connections? Who are you emotionally?
Not very good because
right.
It's like, like y'all said, I couldn't be able to get my emotions right
mm-hmm.
when I was thrust into all this sexual stuff. It's such a being underage, exposed to that stuff. So you kind of mm-hmm. like are, I don't want to say being like a porn star, but just you're just mm-hmm. hypersexualized. And then the people
right.
I was around, they was into a lot of that crazy stuff. And it's like,
yeah so that's just how you really function and relate to the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a lot of guidance growing up. I had a lot of bad people around me, like bad influences.
Mm-hmm.
So as
mm-hmm.
far as emotionally, I feel a disconnect from people emotionally.
Yeah.
Kind of
mm-hmm.
like flat or just don't react the right way or just.
Mm-hmm. So you're all
like, it's like I'm physically there, but mentally and emotionally, it's just like,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm saying?
Can I, Jasmine, can I share a story with you from scripture?
Yes.
This is from John chapter 4. There was a woman who was well known in that town for being very sexually promiscuous. She had been divorced multiple times, and she was now living with a man that she wasn't even married to. And she was so kind of shunned by the community that she would go to the well at an hour to draw water at an hour that wasn't normal. Most people would go in the early morning when it was still cool out. She was going in the middle of the day. And Jesus happens by this well. And he sits down by the well, and she comes up to draw water. And he says, hey, would you give me something to drink? And he engages in a conversation with her. And what's interesting about the conversation is that at some point, Jesus says to her, well, go and call your husband and come back, and I'll engage in that question with you. I'll answer that question. And her response to him was, I have no husband. Now, a lot of times we'll read that passage very flatly, like, you know, just stating a fact. But you could very easily read that passage that she was hitting on Jesus, that she was saying, listen, I'm available. I don't have a husband. I don't have a man in my life. I'm available to you. And what's interesting about her story is that she saw her value, her worth, as only what she could do sexually for a man. That's what she based her value in. And Jesus said, listen, I need you to see much more than that. That's not your true identity. Yes, you are a sexual being. You were made in the image of God as a sexual being, but that's not your core identity. That's not what brings you value and worth. And so for you, Jasmine, I feel like there's this part of you that has bought a lie from the abuse that you suffered, as well as the models that you saw growing up, that says your value as a woman is somehow tied to your ability to be sexual with a man, as opposed to something much deeper than that. And I think that that's what really God wants you to tap into, is what is valuable about you that's much deeper than your sexuality. And that is what these godly men in your life that you see, that is what they would be drawn to. But if you don't believe it about yourself, it'll be hard for them to see it.
And I think another component,
really,
yeah, it is really good. Because I think another component of that as well is that the woman at the well also seemed to be searching for love, searching for what she never got. Hence the living water.
Yes, but when Jesus revealed to her that he knew her, that quenched her thirst.
Yes.
She was ecstatic to be known.
Yes.
In a non-sexual way.
Absolutely.
And yes. I think that's, for Jasmine, your form of connection is sexual. That's the only way you really know how to be connected to others. And yet I think you're longing for is that emotional connection.
Yeah.
Where you can be known and it not be sexualized.
And that's where it gets confusing and hard, because, you know, it's like, I need to be connected. I need to be loved. And the way I feel safest or most comfortable is through sex or sexual act.
It's easy.
Yeah. Whereas what I actually need is someone to know me for who I am.
And that's much more vulnerable.
Yes. Yeah. Jasmine, I just want you to know that you are not a bad person. You are not evil. You are not bad. You have been wronged. There are some unhealthy and dangerous things happening inside of you. But the fact that you're calling today, the fact that you are pursuing this with your background and your history is very remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
Very remarkable. And so we want to guide you in the direction that can really, really help you. I really, really encourage you to check out SLAA, Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. There are groups, there are online groups, there's groups
in-person groups
that can really help guide you along that way. And I think that getting into recovery for that is really important. But I think that there's another component that's just as important, and that is healing from the trauma that you're carrying inside of you. The pain of the way that you have been horrifically mistreated in your life. And so you've got to get into some deep, deep, deep trauma work here and get below the surface and get underneath that, and then build, and in addition to that, build really healthy community and relationships.
And now we're going to talk to Michelle in Dallas, Texas, who's listening or watching us online. Hi there, Michelle. Thank you for calling in today.
I'm calling because about a month ago, I had an abortion. It's not something I wanted. It was something the other party wanted. and they were being abusive about it, and I went through with it. And looking back, I should have gotten family and the police involved. But anywho, he left me a week later after he promised that he wasn't going to leave me. And for some reason, he still wants to keep in contact. And he told me that his ex is staying with him for 10 days because she's having water problems in her apartment. And that was the ultimate slap to my face. I'm just so angry and so hurt. I don't know how to move forward. I mean, I am seeing a therapist, but from a biblical standpoint, like, it's kind of hard not to be mad at God. And I know that it's not God's fault, but I'm so mad at this person. How can they be so selfish to just think about themselves? I'm left without my baby. I'm left without this individual, which at the end of the day, I don't think he's a good person. He's not a good person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, abortion, at least in my case, is not the right choice. And if I could go back, I would never do it because Planned Parenthood, they don't tell you the consequences it takes on your health, your emotions. It's just a mess.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, Michelle, that's a lot. It's so painful when you're going through this loss of many levels.
Yeah. Michelle, how can we help you? What's your question for us?
I just don't know how to move forward. I mean, I'm still going on with my routine, but I just don't know how I can heal from a biblical standpoint. And I feel like I'm not being godly because I have so much hate for this individual.
So let's pause on the you being godly part for a moment. I think you got to back up some and just be human. Let's start there. Right? You made some human choices, not godly ones, human choices. And so did the person you were intimate with. And the hate and the anger and the frustration, all of that is a part of you being in the grief process. You've suffered several losses. And so I would slow down and pay attention to what is happening to you. And also where you are in this, because I think you're really angry with him for forcing this choice on you. And I think you're probably angry with yourself for making the choice. And that's okay. You've got to allow yourself time and space to move through those feelings. He is not a good person for you.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that you realize that you've been traumatized, not only from the relationship, but also from the abortion experience. And as you share with us what your journey has been like, it's like you're reading the weather report. It's this flat affect. And I'm saying that not only for you to recognize that, but also for the listening audience. A lot of times when we go through really difficult things, our brain just kind of shuts down to a level where we're trying to do the next thing. I'm wondering, Michelle, do you have people around you other than this man who love and care for you and that know this part of your story yet?
People that at my church do, only my pastor does, and some ladies who've gone through it when they were my age.
Okay. That's very important because the shame that you're feeling is going to keep you isolated. And so you want to push through that. And those people are going to be safe for you. And you're going to a therapist. So that's going to be good. And it's okay for you to disconnect from this man.
Mm-hmm. It's necessary.
It's necessary, and it's going to be hard. And, you know, I'm wondering what keeps you from doing that now? What is your thought when you think, I just don't want to talk to him anymore. I can't have him in my life. What's the story you tell yourself?
Sorry.
That's okay. It's hard, Michelle. It's very hard.
I want to tell them what a selfish person they are. And he hasn't told his parents, and he doesn't plan on it. And I don't understand why he felt the need to spend 2 weeks with his ex. I just want to tell him how I feel and not talk right. to him ever again.
Yeah. Right.
When you tell him how you feel, when you think about telling him how do you feel, what do you imagine will happen?
Nothing. Anger. Because he's an angry person.
No, I mean for you. For you. I have an aversion to him already, so let me just get that out there. I don't like how he feels, and what's going on with him isn't even important to me right now. I'm really concerned about you, and I want you to be focused on you and concerned about you. You are giving him way too much energy. He's gotten way more from you than he ever deserved to begin with, but he's continuing to get that. So I want to know, when you say those things, you're a selfish person, how could you do this? When you hear yourself saying that to him, what does it do for you?
I feel better telling him how I feel, but I also feel bad for myself, because how could I have allowed myself to be treated like this?
Well, I think that we want to be loved, and we listen when people tell us they love us. And people lie, and they use words to trick and confuse us. And you wanted to believe in him because you wanted to be loved. And so people aren't all good and kind and wonderful, not even people who profess Christianity. Mm-hmm. And so you have to take your life back and not allow him to have anything else to say in it or do it. The question about why he would spend time with his ex is obvious.
You know, Michelle, one of the things that you can do, and you can do this with your therapist, is you can write out what you would say to him, and you can process with your therapist so that it is in a safe place that you get to express yourself and you get to do this journey in a safe way. Like Jackie said, you know, we really don't want to expend any more energy towards him, and it will be for your betterment going forward. I think I would love for us to send her Changes That Heal, and I just want to encourage you, Michelle, stay connected to the women at the church, stay in your counseling, process, and continue to do the healing. You are worth it. You are worth it.
And you mentioned earlier being angry with God and maybe feeling some type of way about that. God's big. He's a big guy. Mm-hmm. He can handle your upset. Mm-hmm. And he's the one you should take it to.
So, Michelle, we're going to send you a copy of the book Changes That Heal. I think you should also sign up for the Take Your Life Back online course that begins April 7th. And what words of encouragement would you give to Michelle? And we've given her plenty already, but if she calls this guy or something and he says, "Hey, baby, I'm sorry. Let's start all over again." Is that an option?
My words are no. Mm-hmm. Don't call him.
Yeah.
He has nothing to offer you but That's pain. Right. Mm-hmm. And right. you deserve better.
Yes, Michelle, you do deserve better. He showed you who he is. Mm-hmm. Do not waste any more time of your precious life on him.
Yeah.
And we'll pray for him too. Yeah. I want restoration for him, but not with you, Michelle.
That's right.
So this weekend, it was a particularly stressful weekend for me. I had some unexpected deadlines that just came up, and I literally worked from morning till late evening, both Saturday, both Sunday.
Oh, man.
I mean, I had a couple of moments where, you know, I went to church and I went to dinner with my daughter, but mostly it was just high stress. Mm. And Now, I could feel the anxiety building inside of me, and there were times that I had to manage that. So there was a moment where I was waiting on my daughter. I couldn't find her in the parking lot, and she was like, I'm right here. And I was like, but you can see me, and can you just tell me where you're at? But I had to manage that. I managed that.
That's
on
right,
the inside.
You couldn't even call 1-800-229-3000.
Exactly.
We weren't here over the weekend.
Exactly. So I talked myself down in that situation. There were other moments where I realized, you know what, I got to get my energy out, and I went on a walk. And there were other times where I just said to my wife, hey, can you give me a hug? And can I talk this out with you? Now, not too many years ago, that's not how I would handle my stress. I was more like a soda bottle that you were shaking up. And at a certain point, whoever was around when the cap came off, it was not good. Now, depending on your attachment style, you're going to handle stress differently. So avoiders flight. They usually run away. They go to the gym, go by themselves, escapism. Sometimes it's porn. People pleasers freeze. They please and appease. They calm everyone else down so that they can calm themselves down. And then vacillators, who are very much relationship idealists, which is my recovery style, they let it all out. They have these anxiety bills and they let it out. But how did Jesus handle stress? And I was thinking about this, that Jesus' most stressful time obviously was the cross. And then right before the cross, how did he handle stress? We went to the Garden of Gethsemane, and he had the disciples come with him. And then he had the few, Peter, James, and John, come with him a little further. And he said to them, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me. Now, what was that like? We only get that word in there, but he was pining. He didn't know. He knew what was coming. And that must have been awful to see him go through that anguish. Now, Jesus didn't flight. He didn't run away. He stayed in the Garden of Gethsemane. If it was me, I would have been out of there, as far away from there as possible. He didn't freeze. He took his disciples with him, and he had vertical support with God the Father, but he also had horizontal support with the disciples. And he didn't fight. When the captors came and Peter cut off the high priest's servant's ear, what did Jesus do? He put it back on. So he didn't fight, he didn't flight, he didn't freeze. Jesus is our example. We need to have that vertical support, which I had when I went to church. That was a really good time for me. And I made sure that I built in that horizontal support. And thankfully, my wife and I, we've been working on this for the last few years. So we were able to comfort each other. So my challenge for listeners is to think about, what do you do with difficult emotions when you're stressed? Do you have vertical support with the Father? Do you have horizontal support with others? Because we're either going to bring our stress into relationship and receive comfort, or we're going to go to non-relational things, which are most likely destructive for us.
For sure. I'm happy to hear you went to church, because with deadlines, that's something that you could have easily said, I don't have time to go today.
I needed it.
Yeah, but you needed it. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's something we all need to remember. We need the church. We need each other. It's not about the building. It's just going in and being with people that you love, that love you, that want to come alongside you.
Quick comment first on what Mark said, because I think it's surprising, although we preach this on New Life so frequently, that people are the answer to emotional problems, God and people. But when we've been hurt in relationship and we can't trust people, or when our pride, I'm supposed to help myself, when those two things stand in the way, and it makes us feel probably paralyzed to be able to take that horizontal help or build the horizontal help, it's so understandable that those obstacles keep us from people. So if that's the case for you, you're too fearful, or you believe you're supposed to do it yourself. I've held both of those beliefs. Then we can connect you with a counselor, with a coach, with a group of other people who know they're imperfect. They know they need help, but they're also afraid and they're trying it. So let us connect you with people that can put what Mark described into action.
Now let's listen to Alex, who called in to share that he has a female coworker who expresses interest in him. And because he has no interest in another woman outside his marriage, he expressed interest in how to address the situation. Following that, we're going to hear from Ron and Mickey as they share their story about how New Life has made a difference in their lives. Your generosity helps to make generational impacts. Thank you.
We're going to go to Alex in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, discovering us through Recovery Group. Alex, we are so grateful that you're with us today. Talk to us. What's going on?
So I'm a part of an Everyman's Battle group. So just to give that a little bit of background, so my wife and I are 4 years out from an incident of infidelity. So God is keeping us together. So that's a praise.
That's awesome.
And so just recently, one of my coworkers, a female coworker, came up and said, "Hey, this other girl is, you know, kind of talking about you a lot, and it seemed like she may have a crush on you." That's obviously not something that I want in my life. So this coworker was coming to me from a way of kind of being helpful. You know, I kind of took a step back and said, okay. So I went home, talked to my wife, told her what happened. And so, you know, the course of action that I took was trying to figure out how do I get this handled, you know, from an employment, you know, standpoint without really getting anybody into trouble, because, you know, that other employee didn't really talk to me about it directly, didn't make any, you know, passes at me. And I also don't want to divulge too much non-essential information to my employers.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a great question. And a little bit tougher scenario, especially since you're working through areas of infidelity. You're working through into greater wholeness, going through every man's battle. I mean, this is,
well, I love
you're
that
on the
you
right
took
track.
It to your wife immediately.
Yeah.
Because yes, that's really fantastic. Important instead of letting the idea kind of fester inside of you.
Yeah.
Right. Or trying to squelch it. You just brought it out into the open with her so that you guys could be a team, and you're reaffirming your connection to your wife and her as the priority.
And that absolutely. Shows us the trust that's being built in the marriage.
That.
Yeah, absolutely love that. So Gigi, where does Alex go from here?
Yeah. So I've got a few bits of advice coming from an inexperienced counselor, having never had a coworker interested in me before. But I'm going to share with you what I think I would do if I was ever in this situation. So, Alex, number one, what you already did, I'm so glad that you already talked to your wife about it. Number two, I think that you could go back to the coworker that came to you originally. If you haven't already done so, you could say to that coworker, "Hey, it would probably be helpful if you could let that person know, since she's already indicated to you that she is attracted to me or she has interest in me, if you could communicate to her that I'm happily married and I have no interest in pursuing a relationship with anybody at work." If your coworker could do that, that would save, obviously, the woman the embarrassment of having to have that conversation with you. It would certainly save having to go to HR or to your employer or anybody like that, involving other people where it's not necessary. I would say you could do that. And then number three, label your love early. Talk about your wife regularly on the job. Talk about
have a
picture on your desk. Talk in a healthy way about your relationship, how much you enjoy spending time with her, how much you enjoy the activities that you guys do together. The more you do that, the more you are communicating to the outside world, I am not available. I am not looking. I am not interested. I am quite content with what I already have. So I would you've already done the first one. I would do those other two.
I've done number two and number three. I've probably got three or four pictures of me and my wife, my family. The other coworker, the one that had expressed interest, is already aware that, you know, that I've talked about my family, I've talked about my wife, all in positive ways, talking about my strong, you know, Christian background. And she is apparently also, you know, has a strong Christian faith. And then I think was kind of recently divorced. So that, you know, and I'm not one of those people, like I said, work in recovery. This isn't like, press into somebody who's, this was like, hey, sorry to hear that. And then just glance right past it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So now, Alex, let me ask this. Can I ask a clarifying question?
Sure.
Has this coworker that's expressed attraction, is it just that she's expressed attraction, or has she expressed that she wants to follow up on in some way in terms of a relationship with you?
I don't believe that that's the case. But according to my new, I'll call neutral coworker, according to them, it's just kind of this repeated like, man, you know, and just constantly commenting just on, you know, me and my, whatever attractiveness that she has. So it was just
part of the attraction.
Like one passing comment.
Yeah, but part of the attraction may be the fact that you are loyal to your wife, mm-hmm. that you love your family, that you're committed to your Christian faith, right? Those are all attractive qualities that she sees and admires in you. That doesn't necessarily, just because I have an attraction to someone doesn't mean I have to act on that attraction. Correct?
Yeah, good. Yeah, correct. Yeah. But it just sounded like it was kind of excessive, the amount that it was being discussed when I wasn't around.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And we don't know how much the neutral person was interpreting the comments either. It mm-hmm. could be that in sure. this coworker's going through a divorce or being divorced was maybe lamenting about what she misses, yeah. what she desires to have, and that looks very attractive in you. But again, we don't know her intentions. I think I would maintain really good boundaries, as you're doing. Mm-hmm. Just don't ever be alone with her. Be cordial and nice, but keep it short and very professional.
Yeah. Well, I find this common, very, very common in recovery from, you know, some of our sexual broken mm-hmm. behaviors as well as infidelity, is that attraction becomes threatening to both the husband and the wife. Mm-hmm. That attraction becomes this monster in the world that's going to take your life down. Mm-hmm. But yeah. to your point, JJ, attraction is just a thing on planet Earth we all have.
Yeah.
And recovery is about not needing to do anything with it.
Right. And that's where just even Alex checking inside of himself.
Yeah.
What mm-hmm. does that information do for him internally?
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Does that excite him right. in some way?
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. Because yeah. right? as a yeah. man, that could be very, or a woman,
sure.
that could be very, as a person.
It could stir.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Right. We all want to be found attractive.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. a human reality. We want to be found attractive. When I'm now using that to build my identity on, when mm-hmm. I'm using that to curry certain favor with people, right? That's where it becomes problematic. But the desire to want to be attractive, that's normal. That's mm-hmm. human. Right. To talk about that, for you, Alex, to be able to talk about that with your wife, to check in with her. Hey, how are you doing? Just having this information. I'm checking in regularly. No, I've never been alone with this woman. I'm not going to be alone with this woman. But the fact that we still work together, how are you doing with that? Is that triggering for you? What do we need to do to resolve those triggers?
Yeah. Well, and I just think, like, it's just such a good reminder of the ongoing work of recovery, mm-hmm. you know, that, hey, what does this stir up for us? What does this stir up right. for me? And what's right. this next step of work that I need to do? And again, one of the things I love in Every Man's Battle and our Intimacy and Marriage Workshop is mm-hmm. that when there is a deeper emotional intimacy, physical attraction becomes less of a thing. Mm-hmm. Its energy is removed. And so both a husband and wife can be like, oh, true. You find that. Yeah, that person's attractive. That person. Mm-hmm. But it's not a threat.
No.
It doesn't right. mean right. anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's that ongoing thing. Now, to your point, JJ, if boundaries are crossed, we got to, one, recognize what the boundaries are, what crossed, and then what we do about it.
So New Life, actually, I grew up in kind of an abusive, violent home. And so a little later in my young adult life, I was unsure of how to just handle things. And so I started listening to New Life when they were Minuth Meyer, kind of towards the beginning. And it really gave me peace to hear the questions that I wanted to ask and then answered over the radio. And it kind of like, okay, that's how I can start navigating things. And it really helped me quite a bit. And through the years, just reading some of the materials that was written, that New Life, and then, of course, now we're Club New Life, so we get more. And it's just helped us in our more mature Christian life, just becoming more Christ-like. So I would say that's my part.
For me, the question that New Life helps me answer is, what do you do when you don't know what to do? When life comes at you hard, who do you go to? Who do you listen to? And for me, New Life is a life source of biblical knowledge, and clinical experience. So they've helped me mature, change the way I think, help my marriage, help my family, and help me make be more mature in my faith. So I can share that with others. Everyone who knows me knows about New Life.
Yeah.
Because I never stop talking about how much they've been helpful for me and my family.
We would love to hear you share your testimony. And if you would like to do that, or if you have a question to ask New Life Live, you can call 888-NEW-LIFE. That's 888-639-5433 and leave your testimony or your question on a recording. Better yet, you can call in during our taping, which the number is 1-800-229-3000, Monday, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays from 1 to 3 Eastern. You can let the call screener know that you're one of our Treasured Club New Life family, and we'll put you at the front of the line. I want you to know about some upcoming New Life courses. You know, we launched them this year, and we've had a great response, and we want to let you guys know first of what is available. So we have Divorce Recovery, Every Young Man's Battle, which will be for ages 18 to 25. We have a Grief Recovery course, a Lose It for Life, and Take Your Life Back. Most of these will begin April 7th, but you can always go to newlife.com for more information, or you can call us and we'll tell you all about it. Our courses are led by a therapist or a coach, and it's a 12-week, once a week, 1 hour a week on Zoom, and you're talking about these topics, and you're in a group of no more than 9 people. It's really a powerful process, and we're so excited to hear about the great response that we're having to the New Life courses. We have upcoming events. We have Every Man's Battle, April 25 through 27 in Washington, D.C. We have Restore, May 2nd through 4th, at Dallas, Texas. And our next Club New Life Zoom is May 15th. And we're going to hear from JJ West on secure attachment. And just a note about our Club New Life Zoom. It is a time where we gather together. You'll get to see some of the New Life staff. We'll have times where you can ask questions if you want. But listen, if you just want to come and listen, no one's going to call on you. There's no, you know, we're not going to expect anything from you. We just want to give you a time where we can connect with each other. And, you know, there's many ways to listen to us, whether it is on your local station that you've heard us for many years. Maybe it's SiriusXM, or you can listen online. You can download the free New Life app, and you can also listen at your leisure on their podcast, and you can get that wherever you get your podcasts. You know, when we were talking about forgiveness at the beginning, I'm always reflecting on Dr. Dave Stoop, who taught us so much about forgiveness. And one of the quotes that he said was, marriage is the school of forgiveness, because you're going to have to say you're sorry quite a bit. But also the freedom that God gives us. You know, once he has forgiven us, we don't have to work at it anymore. One of the questions that we get many times is, I can't forgive myself. How can I forgive myself? And Dave used to say, when you aren't forgiving yourself, you're putting yourself in God's place because God has already forgiven you. I hope that encourages you some way today. And maybe if you want, you can call us. We'll get you connected with a counselor. But also, one of his books, Forgiving What You'll Never Forget, was a powerful book in my own life. We have many resources and therapists who'd love to help you with any topic, whether it's forgiveness, anxiety, life recovery, coaching, or whatever's on your heart, whatever you're facing today. We are so grateful to be part of your life, and we're so grateful that you're part of Club New Life.